Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to another exciting and informative edition of Atlanta's Most Trusted Advisors here on the Business Radio X Network, featuring our good friend and host, Miss Bonnie Buell Russick. How are you, Sunshine?
I'm great. How are you doing, Stone?
I am doing well and really looking forward to today's show. Who'd you bring with you?
I brought two extraordinarily smart women today. We have Allison McLeod, who is a tax planner with FinLogic. And we also have Emma Folks, who is a financial planner with Folks Steel Wealth Management. So, and the goal of today is to kind of talk about year-end planning. I'm still kind of pinching myself that it's December 6th. I don't know quite how we got here, but it's that time of year. And I'm sure you guys are both busy with helping people with their year-end tax planning.
Yep.
So
definitely.
Just give me a little bit of background on each of you, a little bit of information for our guests, and then we're going to dive right in.
Oh, I guess I get to start. I'm Emma Folks. I'm a certified financial planner. I'm a branch manager, a managing partner of Folks Deal Wealth Management. My office is in Buckhead, right on Lenox Road, right across from the JW Marriott.
Nice.
And if you like to eat, right next to Houston.
Who doesn't like to eat? Come on.
My name's Allison McLeod. I'm a CPA and tax partner with FinLogic. My offices are right near Emma's, conveniently located in Buckhead, Atlanta, Georgia. Our firm specializes in working with small growing businesses and nonprofits, helping them with tax planning and compliance, as well as day-to-day bookkeeping, all the way to running their companies as outsourced accounting and tax departments.
Wow, that sounds very important and hard to me.
It's a lot of fun.
I'm sure. So in the whole idea of talking about year-end tax planning, I would kind of like to know from both of you guys, what are the top maybe three things that you're seeing out there that you're telling your clients that maybe, you know, a little bit different than, you know, throw money into your 401k or the things that we always hear. Is there anything different or unique that you're recommending this year?
Well, you know, one thing I'm sure, this is Allison, I'm sure Emma will talk about this a little bit too, in light of the recent presidential elections and President-elect Trump's interest in reducing taxes and potentially making that retroactive to 2017 when it happens in 2017. Again, potentially. You know, for me, you know, a lot of times with my clients, I'm usually telling them to accelerate deductions and defer income, but really even more so than in the past. You know, the tax rates for 2017 were really expected to remain mostly unchanged, but that doesn't look like that will be the case anymore. Again, we're trying to predict the future here, but you know, for the next few weeks, to the extent that my clients have that flexibility, especially my business owner clients do, you know, it's very much a strong push, more so than usual, to see what can be done to bring deductions in when their tax rates are higher than they probably will be next year, and to push out income if they're anticipating any kind of sale. Sale of a rental property. A lot of people are doing that these days because now the market's come back. They actually are not underwater with their mortgages anymore and they can get out of the property, but next year might be a better year to sell. If you can get the buyer to wait a few extra days. So that's been kind of standard, but really even more so than in the past.
And predicting the future is probably very challenging, as you mentioned. But that's interesting to kind of think about, you know, postponing some really big, like you say, sale, or, you know, try and reduce your taxes as much as you can this year because you may have the opportunity to have an even lower rate. Mm-hmm. Are you anticipating that rate will be kind of across the board, or will it apply more so to certain tax brackets?
Yeah. So far, you know, what Trump plant wants to do, and we'll see what Congress eventually passes, but, you know, he wants to have us go down from 7 to 3 tax brackets. I think that will help folks kind of get an idea of where they stand a little bit better because there's not so many options. So, you know, folks who are making a little bit less or, you know, what we would consider middle class, I don't know that their tax situation will change too much. It's really for the folks on the higher end that are traditionally right now in the 30%+ brackets. They're going to see, you know, the highest tax bracket, income tax bracket right now, federal is about 40%. And in Trump's plan, the highest tax bracket would be 33%. So, you know, that could be a pretty nice difference for somebody if, you know, they have $1 million of income this year or a big sale. So, so to answer that question more succinctly, it's going to be the higher earners that see that benefit.
Yeah, from some of the research I did, the people that are going to be making over $700,000 will, I think, based on what's being proposed, okay, so no crystal ball, we don't know, should end up maximizing, I think, over $17,000 or some number along those lines back into their cash flow on an annual basis. So it's geared for the, like, as Allison mentioned, for the higher income earners. And there should be a couple of breaks for the people kind of in that upper middle class bracket that, you know, can't catch a break. You know, they get AMTs and, you know, they work hard, but they're paying a whole lot in taxes. And even if they have kids in school, they're really not catching a break right now.
Hmm. Well, yeah. And one thing Trump says he wants to do is repeal the Affordable Care Act. I'm not going to opine on whether that's feasible or not, but it does have some taxes that are attached to it. And a lot of middle class folks get hit with those taxes every year. So that would be, if that's something that passes, if the ACA gets repealed, then presumably the related taxes are gone. And then those folks in that middle range would probably see a real benefit right there.
So is December a good time of year to have this conversation with your tax and financial planning professionals? Are we too early, too late? What's the good timing for the average person and particularly the business owner?
I would say October-ish.
Oh, okay. Wow, really?
Well, what would you say, Allison?
For me, I have it throughout the year. Certainly, you know, when I had these conversations with my clients in the summer, we couldn't predict the results of the elections or that, you know, whichever candidate was elected in would be so interested in seeing tax policy changes so quickly in his or her candidacy, or presidency rather. So, the conversation has to happen throughout the year. I would say if you're just starting to have this conversation, it could be too late. You may have already made some decisions. I've had some new clients come on board with me this fall that they've already sold some properties or done some things that, you know, I think from a tax perspective, they may not have chosen to postpone, but I certainly would have advised them that it may have been more tax advantageous to do so. But if you've already been in sort of planning mode all year round, now is a good time to tweak it. And I'm doing that with a lot of my clients right now.
Yeah. So for me, one of the things that I look at or I bring up with my clients is tax loss harvesting. So if they have gains, tax loss, and it doesn't mean farming. Right? So it's if you have capital gains from a sale, as Allison mentioned, from certain types of investments, it's a good time to sit down with your CFP or your CPA to see they should be working together for you and with you to see if you have any dogs in your portfolio. You know, are there any underperformers that you can sell and, you know, try to offset the loss with the gains that you have? excuse me. Each year you can deduct about $3,000. And if you have more than $3,000 to write off in losses, you can carry it forward, you know, into other years. You know a lot about that.
Yeah, I imagine.
And then
so.
I also have people review their withholdings. A lot of times people play games with their withholdings throughout the year. And so if you've had any changes, like you got married or got divorced, you know, a new job, new income, if you started a new business venture or you're now a self-employed person, you want to mess around with your withholdings a little bit. If you owe too much, come tax time, you may want to adjust your withholding so you're not having to stroke that big check to the IRS. And if you get back too much at the end of the year, you may want to consider, and everybody's heard this, you know, why are you waiting till the end of the year or why are you waiting till April to get money back from the government? And one of the things that I really try to implore on people is that money that, you know, if it's several thousands of dollars, that's money that could be coming or added back into your cash flow on a monthly basis. And on a monthly basis, what could you be doing with that? You could be putting it into savings where it will be earning interest. You can be putting it into investments, which will be earning interest. You can be paying down debt, which will be reducing interest. But instead, you're leaving it with the government, and the government is basically, you're giving them a interest-free loan. You know, if we owe them money, they charge us interest, but we're freely giving them money, right? And they give it back to us with no interest. Not even a thank you note. Right?
The thank you note is in the mail.
Oh, okay.
It's on its way.
And then the things that I you know, check on, and especially with newer clients, it's a good time to check your beneficiaries. And I call it the X check. You know, again, if you have had any life changes, you know, any breakups, anything like that, you know, you want to look at your retirement plans. Who's your beneficiary? You want to look at your life insurances. Who's your beneficiary? You want to look at your wills. Who's supposed to be the executor of your estate? Do you still like them? Who's supposed to be the guardian of your children? Do you still trust them? And any asset that you own, you know, if you were to pass away, who do you want to have this asset and who don't you want to have the asset anymore? So those are, you know, three of the things that I really hone in on with people.
Well, it sounds almost like like we do a lot of times in our homes, it's kind of time to clean house and look at what you have, what you don't have, what do you need, what can you get rid of? You know, it's kind of that same idea only from, you know, a financial perspective, but I hadn't even thought about the idea of taking a look at your will or your beneficiaries and those kind of things. Cause that's one of those things that, you know, frequently you'll do a will and then you set it aside. And if you have a will at all, I'm amazed sometimes to hear that so many people who should, well, everybody should probably have a will, but so many people don't. But that's a really good idea, is to kind of take a look at everything like that.
It lends to some really interesting conversations when you have a blended family in the room, a couple that's, you know, later on in years and they're married. And then we find out that one of them still has their ex-spouse as the beneficiary for something. And man,
I was going to say, interesting might not be thoroughly covering that.
It's exciting.
And I'll put in a plug for our absent attorney friends, because they're often not allowed to market very heavily for themselves. But, you know, I have clients who come to me, they think they have a tax problem, or they just know they have a problem and we can chat about it. But you're right, Bonnie, oftentimes I walk away realizing that a client that I kind of thought was very savvy and had it together doesn't have basic estate planning documents. Sometimes folks just think, well, that's for people that have more money or make more money, or they just don't know the ramifications of, you know, I was talking with Emma about this the other day. You know, listening to one client who has small children say that they don't have a will. And I said, well, you know, what if, you know, you and your spouse are both in the car and there's an accident, and what's going to happen to your kids? You know, would you like the state of Georgia to be in charge of that decision? So, you know, it's important. Yeah, I also think people say, well, I can, you know, go to LegalZoom and I can get a will drawn up, and oh, I cringe every time.
I just had this conversation with someone.
You're really, yes, you're paying for a document. It's just like when my clients come to me, there's a compliance piece. They are paying for a tax return, but the real value is sitting down with a knowledgeable professional who understands your unique situation and how the applicable laws work with that, to get you the answer you want. You know, if you prepare your own tax return and it's there's an issue with it, it's likely the IRS will let you know in a couple years. But if you prepare your own will and it's not in accordance with what you truly want, you're not going to know, but everybody you leave behind will, and it will be a mess and it will not be what you want.
It will be an expensive mess. And that's how I break it down to people is, do you love your family? And if the answer is no, and you don't care what happens, you know, like Prince did, right? He didn't really have heirs, right? So he didn't leave a will behind. If you don't leave a will behind, your family is going to go to town on each other. Your family will implode. So if you don't love them, don't do a will. If you do love them and care about them and you want to keep families whole, then you put a will in place. So many families break apart because of the will. And so one of the things that we see people put in wills now is if anyone contests the will, they're written out. So that stops a lot of the malarkey.
I like that.
That stops a lot of the malarkey that will happen And again, you
that's
know,
that's a pearl right
yeah.
there.
So no arguing. If you argue, you contest, you're out.
Interesting. Yeah. Wow. So, and, you know, like so many things, and we've had this conversation on the show a number of times, a little bit of investment up front. And I understand it costs money and money is tight, particularly for business owners and, you know, people that are, have lots and lots of expenses, but the just investing in some expertise and the advice of professionals can just save you and your loved ones so much money down the road, whether it be taxes, financial planning, wills, whatever that is. It just makes sense.
And Allison can speak on this or correct me because I always say a lot of incorrect things in her presence.
that's not true.
Is anytime you pay one of those professionals that you just mentioned, an estate planning attorney, whether it's a business attorney, a CPA, a CFP, a fee to help you protect and maintain your assets, isn't that tax deductible?
In a most cases, it is. If you're a business owner, it's for your business. It certainly is. As far as individuals go, it can be an itemized deduction as long as there's a protection of your financial assets involved.
Correct. And mm-hmm. everything that we just talked about would be considered as such, I believe. So it's almost foolish not to. You know,
on a number of fronts,
you know, pay $1,000 for X, Y, or Z, or pay tens of thousands of dollars because you wanted to save $1,000.
Yeah.
So you really have to ask yourself, you know, what makes the most sense? Am I protecting myself? Am I protecting my family? And that's what it all, and I do guilt people about their families a lot. But.
Well, and even if you don't have the money right now, it's something to, again, budgets come up this time of year and trying to budget for the next year. And, you know, maybe it's something that you can't really pay that right now, but putting that in a budget for next year and figuring out, okay, if I just need to set aside $200 a month to make sure that I get this paid for and set up, that makes sense. And that may be a way to kind of make sure that these kind of basic things happen, even if money is tight. So I would absolutely love your thoughts on that.
And
too.
One other thing, and I don't want to forget about it, is for our older listeners, who are over 70 and a half, they have to take out required minimum distributions before the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Otherwise, the government will tax them or penalize them half of what they were supposed to take out.
Oh, my.
So if all of their monies are in an IRA, or several, it can be several IRAs, they can take their required minimum distribution from one account and not have to worry about the other ones. If they leave money behind in, say, 401ks or 403bs or any type of employer-sponsored plan, doesn't matter how much money you take out of your IRAs, those plans are going to require you to take out the distribution based on the amount that you have in that account. And there's a, I think it's regulation, Form 590A or B or something, where the calculation is based on your age, what the factors are. Part of the CFP, I had to figure that out.
Yeah.
Well, and I'll add to what Emma said. You know, I have a lot of clients who they have this RMD requirement, but they don't
RMD.
Need... required minimum distribution.
Okay.
Requirement. I guess I was a little redundant there. So, but they don't need the cash. You know, they have Social Security coming in. They have other investment sources. They may, you know, they may still be working or something like that. So, but they do have a charitable intent. And maybe it's their alma mater, maybe it's their religious affiliation, something, and they'd like to give a little bit of money. So one nice thing you can do with your required minimum distributions, instead of putting it in your own pocket, is you can, up to $100,000, you can give that directly to a qualified 501c3 organization. You don't get a charitable deduction for it, but you don't have to pick up that required minimum distribution as taxable income.
Right.
So it sounds like it's a wash, and why does it matter? It can matter if it lowers your overall income. And again, why does that matter if your income is lower? It can affect how much of your Social Security is taxable. It can affect, your overall income levels as far as determining how much you're paying in insurance premiums. It can get you under thresholds for being able to do other things, or allowing more itemized deductions to offset your taxable income. So keeping your income down is usually a good idea. So for those who have that requirement, that's also an option that a lot of my clients like, but some of them think it's too good to be true. It's not too good to be true. It's really out there. It was something that was always extended. It was made permanent a year or two ago. So do it. It's a good thing.
And one of the other things, as we're talking about income, required minimum distributions, this is because the monies that people typically put away is in pre-tax or tax deferred accounts. So your 401ks, things like that, you are paying taxes on the harvest instead of the seeds, mm-hmm. right? So you put your money in pre-tax.
I love that analogy. I'm going to use that.
I've been in Georgia a long time. I know a little about farming now. I got a couple of farmers as clients. So when you put money in pre-tax or before you pay taxes, and then it grows, it blossoms into this lovely number, and then the government taxes you and you're paying ordinary income taxes. So right now at the end of the year, any of my clients that they're where I think their incomes may go up, if they're below a certain threshold and they can still qualify for a Roth IRA, it may be a good idea to open one up. And you don't have to fund it until April of 27 of the following year. So it's a nice thing to think about if you don't need the deductions, but I mean, it's really not going to reduce much if you put, $5,500 or $6,000 into whether it's a traditional or a 401k. But again, this is why, working with the two of us makes so much sense, because from a taxation standpoint, we have to be thinking about taxes. You're reducing your overall tax liability, not only now, but also once you're fully retired, and using the Roth IRA as paying taxes on the seeds.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good, that's a good point. And that to what you're saying earlier, I have a client who has a law practice, and we've been working throughout the year for her tax planning. And when I looked at the numbers, maybe mid-November, I said, you've contributed to your Roth in the past, and you were so close to that threshold. If we can get your income down a little bit more, you could put that money in a Roth. And she's like, well, how about if I put some money in my SEP account too? I said, I'll put money in your SEP. That'll lower your taxable income. And then you can still put some money in a Roth.
Yeah.
So, that's what it's good to take a look towards the end of the year when numbers kind of take some shape and you've got a lot of knowns behind you. But it's important to start it towards the middle of the year, the beginning of the year, so you have time to talk to your advisor. They can really understand your cash flow situation, what you're looking to do, what's important to you. And so that can all come together. And everybody's situation is unique. That's why just sticking it on a TurboTax form, if you do an okay job, you'll stay out of trouble with the IRS, but you miss out on the planning opportunities and you may be overpaying your short-term taxes and kind of shooting yourself in the foot for long-term financial success.
Yeah. So how often do you recommend that, say, business owners or really anybody sit down with their CFP or CPA? sure, we'd love to get advice all the time, but, just on a planning basis, how often do you think your client should be in touch with you?
Emma?
Well, for me, at least twice a year, I typically try to get documentation from my clients on a quarterly basis, depending on their situation. If they're business owners and I really want to see what they're going to be able to qualify for. So if they are a small business owner and they have a solo or individual 401k, I want to figure out how much money they can contribute throughout the year and working with their CPA, because there's a lot of tax planning that's involved in trying to reduce their overall tax liability, and the amount of money that they can actually put into a solo 401k is incredible. So for me, it's quarterly, depending on the nature of their business. And for my regular clients, it can be, three times a year, 2 to 3 times a year.
That seems reasonable. What about you?
My conversations typically are around due dates for estimated tax payments, but not necessarily. And it's different from client to client, and it's different from year to year. The same client that says, this is going to be an easy year, I'll talk to you later on. We wrap up the end of the year, everything makes sense, and it's pretty straightforward. The next year, they buy this, they sell that. I talk to them every month. They have open-ended questions, conversations that need to go somewhere. So, I am proactive about reaching out to my clients. And then with our fixed fee pricing model, where we try to be proactive about helping clients reach out to us, because there's not an additional fee to do that. So that really helps me figure out, you know, like I said, I'm doing a lot of tax planning right now, but some of it, you know, it's never ending. There's peaks and valleys of that, but there's some clients that they need that kind of love in October when everybody else needs it in November and December.
Yeah.
It just depends on what they have going on. So yeah, that's really more just staying in touch and you know, being responsive to what each client needs from year to year.
And the fixed fee planning is so important because it saves the clients from themselves if they think they're not going to have to spend money when they call you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There's so many times when we find out stuff after, like sometimes I'll call a client and they'll go, I was just thinking about you. I was trying to decide whether or not I should just, I was listening to, you know, some talking head and they said I should take all the money in my cash reserves and pay off my car. So I did it. Yeah, yeah, I don't have cricket noise right now, but you know, what do you say? Like, oh, really? Well, let's start.
Well, that was not a good idea. How does the fixed fee planning work? Because you kind of took the words out of my mouth.
Go for it, Emma.
Yeah.
So for me, I charge an annual fee for business owners, for individuals. It's usually around 1% of your gross income or if you need add-ons, like if there's extra stuff that we're doing, like education planning, if you need me to deep dive in certain areas, some of my clients want a higher level of service. So they want me to go to the meetings with their CPA or they want me at the meetings with their business attorney or estate planning attorney. Like if they need extra out of me, we kind of, you know, make sure that, you know, it's all fair. But again, it stops people from doing stuff and being afraid to call me. So my fees are anywhere. It can be from $1,500 a year up to $10,000 a year.
Okay.
So our fees are fixed for the year generally, as far as tax services go. And it's just depending on what that client needs. So it's not necessarily based on a percentage of anything. In fact, people registered with the IRS can get in trouble for doing fixed fees and some percentage fees in some certain situations. So we tend to stay away from that. Most accounting firms do charge by the hour. Ours just doesn't. We just, you know, kind of as we were saying before, we found that is, it's a big turnoff for our clients. So, you know, we usually set our tax fees for the beginning of the year, whether it's a new client or existing client, just have a nice long conversation. Here's, you know, if it's an existing client, here's what happened last year. What do you see happening this year? What do you think you'll need? Is it kind of the same old, or are things going to be really different? And we go from there. So as long as it's just day-to-day tax advice, estimate issues, tax planning, reaching out to them with tax solutions that either we or some of our affiliates can provide, you know, all that's just included. So you, as Emma said, you're still going to have that one-off that tells you, oh, and we did. And you think, oh, why don't we talk about this first? Because you didn't have to pay extra for us to talk about this. But for the most part, it's really, really very helpful for folks to talk to us beforehand. Yeah.
I can see. And that's kind of a refreshing model because and value pricing and fixed fee pricing is certainly a conversation that's going on in the accounting industry, financial services, law as well. But there are so few firms, particularly, I would say those, say, over 50, that have embraced it yet because they're just afraid that, well, we just don't know. And, you know, we may lose out on an hour or so of billing or, you know, whatever it is that's driving the fact that they're clinging on to that hourly billing model. But when they think about their clients and how much easier it is to plan for, okay, I'm spending, you know, $500 a month or whatever that might be. And you can budget for that. You can plan for that. The people hate the bill, the hourly fee bill that winds up going away.
We hate sending it.
You know, yeah. I mean, we deal with that in our industry. We actually have a few clients who want us to bill by the hour and, you know, we do it for those that want to, but, you know, frankly, it's value pricing, project pricing, whatever you're calling it today, is so much better. And it's definitely a way I see the industry going, professional services.
People don't like surprises.
No, nobody likes surprises, particularly when it comes to their money.
Especially with money.
Yeah.
I think it's talking out of both sides of your mouth when you tell somebody on one hand, I want to help you with your money. And on the other hand, you send them a bill they weren't expecting for an amount they weren't expecting, and they're not even sure what you did for them.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not the way we've always done it, despite what some people may say, but it is the way we've done it for a long time. So, you know, and getting away from the hourly billing model shifts that financial exposure from your client to you. And who wants to do that, right? So for all the accounting firms that keep charging by the hour, please do that. We're happy to take your clients.
Well, and it saves you time. I have to tell you, as somebody worked for an accounting firm and had to enter your time and your hours, I know
that's what hell is like.
If you've had a taste of that,
that's what happens when you die and go to hell. You have to fill out timesheets for eternity.
Yes.
Is it by the 15 minute, by the 10 minute?
10 minutes.
10 minutes. Oh, my God.
Yes.
That's so painful.
Now, have either of you really focused in on a specific niche or type of client that you cater to or market to? Have you organized your practice around a specific type?
Oh, I get to go? That's awesome. Well, for me, the majority of my clients, I would say, are in their 40s, their 50s, and now I'm starting to see certain things. I have people in their 60s as well and 70s, right? But the bulk of my clients are in this middle age range. And so I would say my specialty is what they call the sandwich generation. And
us Gen X people.
So the sandwich generation, and of course, I'm going to talk about sandwiches because it has to do with food, and food is my absolute favorite thing
in
the world. Everything
I do revolves around. She will take a picture at every meal.
I do.
And then post it everywhere. I do. On LinkedIn, too.
I do.
Yeah.
Oh, do I?
I don't know.
So for me, you know, the sandwich generation, just for a definition, is a generation that's trapped, and I use the word trapped, in between their parents and in between their children. And I use the word trap because everybody has parents and, you know, some people have children, right? But they're trapped because they have to provide support to both of those generations. Mm-hmm. And the complexity of managing your parents from a physical, a mental, and a financial standpoint while helping your kids. So whether it's trying to get your kids into college, get your kids through college, and in some cases, your kids come back. So you may have to help them financially, you know, you may have to help them financially and while you're dealing with your parents. And so for people in this position, it can be an emotional drain and it can be a financial burden. And it's one of the things I do is coach people on the conversation that they need to have with their parents. So if they're not in this situation now, what are the things that you need to be talking to your parents about now so that you're not caught off guard? You know, mm-hmm. What insurances do they have in place? What type of income do they have coming in? You know, there's a tons of questions, and I have a workbook here's my shameless plug, at 10stepscontingencyplan.com. And it's a great workbook to take to your parents or to your family, your loved ones, even your, you know, I have a young son, right? He's 24 years old and he lives on his own. I have no idea. I had no idea how he paid his bills, et cetera, et cetera. So I had him fill one out. So I know if anything ever happens to him, how do I help run his household? So I provide resources from CPAs, estate planning attorneys, elder care attorneys for my clients so that they have everything in place. The biggest thing is to know what you have before you need it. And we get caught off guard a lot of times because our parents don't like to talk about money.
No.
Right? They're very, very close-mouthed about their money. You know, we don't talk about money. But then when you find out that they may not have made the right choices, and it doesn't matter what their profession is, they could be judges, they could be doctors, they could be financial people, they could be accountants, CPAs, doesn't matter what their profession is, you would be shocked at the things that people have not done for themselves.
No, I probably would not be surprised based on some conversation. But it sounds like there's actually almost a therapy element to what you're doing with your clients, or you know, at least kind of trying to advise them. It's not just on the financial decisions, but you're right. There's so much emotion tied up in money and those awkward conversations that none of us want to have. It's like telling your kids about sex or something.
Exactly. You know? Exactly.
But you kind of have to. So everybody's prepared. Everybody knows what to expect. And you can make the best decisions going forward as well.
Yeah, right? there's some, I'm smiling because I... I say some really rude things to my parents and on the holidays. I shouldn't say rude, but just, you know, just some real conversations with them. You know, if I had to sit and listen to them talk to me about sex, then they can sit and listen to me say, hey, don't make me tell you you need to wear Depends. Like, oh, I don't want to have to have these conversations with you. Don't make me have to take your keys away from you. Like, let's be able to have these good conversations. And it's a lot easier to have the tough conversations before they're in that period.
Yeah.
You know, my parents are still relatively young.
You're just preparing
young. Them. Oh, heck, I'm preparing myself. Like, I don't want to wash you. So, you know, I don't want to have to sponge bath you, bathe you. So let's talk about long-term care insurance because I'm not doing it.
Yeah. What do you have to add to that, Allison?
No comment.
But I do think you make a really good point that having those conversations, you know, yes, it's awkward. Yes, it's uncomfortable. And we want everything to be all soft and fuzzy and warm and happy conversations because there are many of us that only see our parents around holiday time. So, you know, it's not like here, pass the turkey. And oh, by the way, tell me about your will and, you know, what you've got lined up for long-term care or whatever that is. You know, it's so important. And frankly, it's a lot more important than any of the gifts that we're giving, any of the food that we're eating or anything like that in the long run.
The easiest thing to do is to tell your parents a story. I mean, if you're middle age, you have a friend or know a friend of a friend who has suffered because they had to go through something with their parents. And so just bring that up and let that lead into the conversation about, you know, well, what will happen if something happens to you, mom? You know, does dad know how to pay the bills or whatever the situation is? Mm-hmm. That's a great way to start the conversation is to talk to them about something that's happened to someone else.
Very good advice.
It reminds me, I have a client that I'm working with right now. We're doing a little financial education. I took them down to their, introduced them to an estate attorney the other day. They needed some wills redone. And the wife is all for talking about death. No problem. The husband, he's okay with it. That was actually an easy sell. But talking about money and paying bills and where our investments and who do we owe and what property we own, she won't touch it. So, you know, you have these dynamics. Everybody's a little bit different. And I think what they found was I was a caring but neutral third party. You know, my relationship with them will not change based on how they feel about money and how they handle it. I'm not going to inherit anything when they pass. I'm not going to be fighting with brothers and sisters and cousins and whoever. So for them, it was, I was sort of, you know, that easy out. And I could position myself in such a way to say, well, you know, if he dies or if he's incapacitated, which is also likely, you know, do you know how to pay the bills? Do you know where things are? And you know, he says, well, you know, just call Allison. And Allison says, well, I don't know where all your bills are either. I don't have access to your online banking. You know, so for them, it was very much an education process. And it's just, it's client by client, it's person by person. Everybody's very different. But I'm thinking about this quote-unquote sandwich generation, and I think they're getting a little screwed because they're going to be taking care of their parents, and so they're getting all this planning done for their parents, or their parents wouldn't do it, and so when they pass, their parents are going to leave them a big mess instead of the small mess if they had done proper planning. And so these folks are going to make sure their kids don't have to go through it. So they're going to clean up their parents' messes. Then they're going to go through the trouble of getting things straight so their kids have less to worry about. And these kids are going to think, well, that was easy. Relatively, right? Relatively. So I wonder if it doesn't create the cycle over again.
In some cases, I would say it shouldn't create the cycle over again because in a lot of cases, the young people are seeing they're suffering because their parents are being pulled in two different directions. So you've got to take little Timmy to soccer practice, but now, you know, you just got a phone call that something happened to mom. Mom got lost on her way home. You know, so I think a lot of the kids are feeling it. In my family, I have a little cousin in New York, and she lived with her mother and her grandmother, you know, and her dad. And grandma started, you know, like leaving the stove on and, you know, got locked out of the house. And so, you know, she's a young person and coming home and realizing grandma's missing and it's snowing outside, right?
So, oh, that's awful.
Yeah. So I think they feel it, and hopefully, you know, as parents, you want to shield them from as much, but for them to see just a little taste, it should also make them self-aware and realize, I don't want, you know, to go through this. And my, thank goodness my parents, maybe they won't say it right away, but when they're older, thank goodness my parents did the right thing, I hope.
Well, that brings up a good question. At what age or at what time should you actually involve your children in some of these planning exercises? I mean, I understand you don't necessarily want to have your 10-year-old in there when you're talking about great detailed tax issues, but, you know, having your, do you recommend that? And do you see that where people are bringing their children into the conversation?
I say it's on a kid by kid basis. You have to determine the maturity of your kid and what they're going to repeat. If it's stuff that you don't want the public to know, you have to kind of gauge at what age. But for people, if you want your kids to get involved with money at an early age, you want to start teaching them about things that appreciate and depreciate as soon as they're able to comprehend. And each child is different, right? So, you know, I can go into a whole thing about teaching kids about money, but I always suggest that for my clients that have children, you know, below college, is you ask them a couple of companies that they really love, you know, McDonald's, Nike, blah, blah, blah. And then you buy them shares in that and you teach them ownership and you let the dividends or any interest, anything, the dividends come to them in the form of a check. Mm-hmm. So they could see that, oh, by owning this, I'm actually making money. But if I buy this, if I buy a pair of Nikes, I don't get money. But if I buy a share of Nike stock, I make money. Huh. So to me,
cool.
You know, when they're, but again, that's not about the parents. That's just about the kids. As the kids get a little bit older, you know, maybe high school age, college age, then you want to kind of bring them in and you don't have to divulge everything to them because they're still young. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want them trying to knock you off because I'm like, oh man, I'm getting an inheritance.
Yeah, that would be a
downside. I watch too much Forensic Files.
Yeah. But that, I mean, I do think having that conversation, well, many years ago before Bank of America purchased them, I was a client marketing director for Bank South. And one of the things that launched while I was there was the Save-A-Saurus account. And a lot of banks have this. Aww. And it was basically a kid's account. And it had, you know, it was fun. It was themed. It had the dinosaur that was Save-A-Saurus and everything. You know, I can talk about it from the marketing perspective because it was like colorful and fun. And, you know, he would actually go into schools and teach kids an open savings accounts with a quarter or, you know, whatever silly little, you know, amount it was, but to kind of teach that. And that always stuck with me. That's been many years ago, obviously, but, you know, having some sort of financial education for your children and having them have some understanding of money. And that, you know, I remember telling my mom, she was like, we can't afford this. That's something I wanted at, you know, Kmart or something probably when I was a kid. And I was just like, well, then write a check for it, you know, without, and I've heard that conversation so many times, like kids don't get that. Yeah. That's you know, that's money as well. And, you know, having them involved, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And one of the things that, you know, I tell parents, and it's hard when you're middle class, is you want to give your kids everything. And the way I raised my son was I gave him what he needed and what he wanted. He had to put a little skin in the game. Whether it was shoes, whether it was anything above what his basic needs were, he had to put skin in the game. And that involved having a bank account. That involved, so as soon as they're able to, you know, when they love money, when they stop ripping up dollar bills, and they, you know, when they stop doing silly things with money, you take them to the bank.
Mm-hmm.
Take them to the bank and have them open their account. Kids love, it's like a game. And they have a lot of apps nowadays that you can tie chores to, you know, finances and a whole lot of other stuff. It's a whole new world out there.
I had never even thought about those apps. That sounds very cool.
So, Allison, you focus on a specific type of client when you're going for a new business, or does it all come to you, or how does that work?
Well, yes. So I would say that we have a few focuses in our firm, but beyond that, yes, we get a lot of nice referrals from some one-offs here and there that are just great folks, and we work with them, even though they're perhaps not necessarily in our niche. You know, on the tax side, I do work a lot with individuals, businesses, and nonprofits. Individuals, you know, range from folks starting out in life, you know, all the way up to those that are trying to figure out how to best send their assets on when they send on. So, yeah, on the business side, the nonprofit side, most of our clients there, the tax and accounting clients, tend to be, you know, they've got a few years under their belt. They're growing. They want to get things right. And kind of going back to what we were saying about, you know, you put the plans in place that you can afford when you can afford them. They've probably not had the most strategic of accounting, tax, legal, et cetera, counsel. And so now is that time where they've survived the first few years and they're really growing, maybe looking to sell one day or just expand their operations. And they know that there's not a good way to get to that next step without some serious outsourced help of a variety of sources, but certainly accounting and tax piece. So those are really the folks that we like to work with. Well, we like to work with anybody who's a nice person, but those are the ones that we tend to focus the most on.
Amen.
I mean, I hear more and more new jerk policies or other words used in place of jerk policies. Yes. We have one ourselves at VBR Marketing.
So. But it makes what you do so much better, much easier when you love the people that you're working with. So,
oh, absolutely.
It's I always say there's three different things you should look for when you're trying to find a professional services advisor. And one of those things is a good personality fit. And that's actually the first, I think, in order of importance. You know, it's not just that pricing model that keeps people calling me. It's that we get along. And, you know, if you're working with someone who makes you feel inferior or doesn't explain things to you, doesn't take time, whatever time it is you need, you're not going to interact with them. And if you don't interact with them, they can't advise you. They can't get that technical piece that you're trying to pull out of them. So it doesn't really matter how much you know. If you don't have a good relationship with your clients, it really just doesn't matter.
Yeah, you definitely don't want that sort of relationship where you dread picking up the phone or like,
it works both ways.
Yeah, yeah. I think so. And that's one of the things that we recommend for our clients. And we work only with professional services and kind of thinking about websites and various other things that where you talk about the services you provide and who you are, you know, having bios that share fun information and show you as a person, as well as a professional who knows your business, you know? So I think I cannot agree more about the idea of finding a personality fit and somebody that you trust, somebody that you get along with. You're spending a lot of money to work with this person. You know, you ought to enjoy it.
And they're working on some of the most important stuff of your life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if you don't like them or you feel guarded, you know, as she mentioned, you're not going to let out the truth. You know, so many times, you know, you ask people, you know, is that it? And then months later, oh, by the way.
Yeah.
Or does this matter? And you're thinking, why didn't you tell me? But they didn't, the trust wasn't there in the beginning. So it's very important.
Okay. Before we wrap, can we talk about me some?
Oh, yeah. Yes, please.
Well, no, I was mentioning to you as we came into the studio, to you both, that I recently had a house fire, you know, almost a total loss. I mean, the very top of the home was like a fire that you see on the 6 o'clock news. The bottom of the home was like a flood that you see on the 6 o'clock news. So it's down to the studs. So what impact, if any, does that have on these conversations? Should I be getting with my financial people? I mean, right now we've got the insurance company that we're talking to, but I don't know, does this have some impact on my tax planning and that kind of stuff? I'm just curious.
Well, I'd say, first of all, what about all your financial and legal documents? Are they okay?
That is a fantastic question. I know where some of them are. They're in the back of my van in a box right now, but
they won't be there long though. Right. So nobody go.
What's your license plate number?
Yeah.
Just kidding.
Wow.
Well, no, that's the next. Now, fortunately, this day and age, a lot of stuff is captured electronically, but no, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in a cardboard box, actually. It has been for several weeks. So one thing I need to do is get on top of all that, huh?
Yeah. Fireproof, waterproof, lockbox.
Yeah.
Sir, Target.
Well, you know, but even those are only good for so long.
Yeah,
you know, they're good for that event, you know, but after that event's over, you want to make sure that you do something with them. So I think, you know, you certainly consider, you know, somehow scanning them, whatever, get them uploaded somewhere or on a hard drive or, you know, and it's likely that, you know, the attorney who drew up the will for you, the CPA who did the tax returns for you, it's likely they have copies, but you want to have copies. And it may be some of those copies are also with whoever needs to have them, you know, the executor of your will, for instance. But so I'd say make sure you get those secure. But as far as like the tax implications of what happened to your house, which is so sad and unfortunate, but I'm glad you're okay. You know, if there's any portion that insurance doesn't cover, there is a potential casualty loss tax deduction.
Okay.
On Schedule A is an itemized deduction. There's some limitations around that. I generally find that for most of my clients to benefit from that, there has to be some sort of catastrophic issue, which you certainly had, that that insurance is not covering in full. So if you have portions of that that your insurance piece didn't cover, there may be a tax deduction there.
So I need to have, I mean, I haven't even had this conversation. I don't know that my, you know, that those folks have even, I need to tell them that we had a fire.
Yeah, it's a good idea. And especially before the end of the year, it's a good idea to just call and go, hey, this is what happened. You know, even when one of my clients, their home got broken into. And the reason why you want to reach out to them is because sometimes they will think of things that you haven't thought of.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like your financial documents not being in a cardboard box in the back of your van. I'm glad I asked.
Yes. And well, I think they need to leave the van back. I'm like all worried about your van getting broken into now. So,
well, the other thing that this brings up for me, though, is I'm getting the distinct idea that if I have a relationship with you, Allison, that is really also a portal to meaningful relationships with trusted advisors in these other disciplines. Like you must find yourself sometimes playing quarterback or facilitator to help me to surround myself with this team of people that can help me in these different areas. Is that?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's only so much I can do. I work in tax law, but generally I can't practice law. So, you know, if you need, you know, any kind of estate planning documents, I can give you some thoughts on what those might look like. But I certainly can't have the same conversation with you or draw up documents like an estate planner would if you wanted to start a new business. You know, I'm going to lean heavily on a corporate attorney to do 90% of that legwork so that I can do my 10% accurately. If you, you know, want to get a good plan in place for long-term financial planning, again, that's composed of so many components. Tax is only one of those. So I need somebody like Emma who can come in and kind of look at it from a broad long-term perspective. So those of us who practice in these fields know folks, and I work with other CPAs as well. So, you know, our firm doesn't do everything. And sometimes, you know, same thing with other professionals. So, you know, we have to work with each other all the time. And the best thing is, you know, if you realize you're in a situation where your advisors don't know each other, just introduce them.
And they should be asking. I mean, they should really be asking. Mm-hmm. You know, I always ask, and I think you do the same thing, and mm-hmm. we go back and forth, but I always ask. That's one of the first things I ask my clients.
Yeah.
You know, who's your CPA? If they have a broker, who's your broker? Who's your insurance agent? Who's this person? Who's that person? And if we do decide to engage and they become a client, can you send an email to them? And we seem to do this frequently. Can you send an email giving me permission to speak to them?
Sure.
Or is it okay if I speak to them? And if I'm working with someone and they have a CPA, I want the CPA to see the financial plan, because the CPA may be on a totally different path and I need to make sure that what I'm recommending doesn't negatively impact them. So they should be working together.
And the CPA may know things that, you know, the client didn't necessarily think to share with you. And, you know, it wasn't, you know, anybody trying to withhold anything necessarily, but, you know, everybody looks at things from different perspectives, and kind of getting everybody together to look at the big picture can only benefit the client. And also having, you know, we were talking about that trusted relationship and having somebody where you have a really good personality fit, likely the other advisors that that person recommends are also going to kind of have that same personality fit.
Oh, for sure.
And, you know, so you don't have to go through the process of, you know, finding somebody just off the street and saying, oh, well, this is a corporate attorney and they charge $5 less an hour than these guys do. You know, you're getting that additional input and you're going to get hooked up with advisors who are going to have your best interest at heart and be fun to work with.
Fun to work with is important.
Yeah, all right, so especially if you work in tax.
Let's make sure that our listeners know how to get in touch with these folks if they want to continue the conversation. And so website, emails, whatever is appropriate.
Absolutely.
Sure. This is Allison. A great way to get in touch with me. Two ways. Phone is 678-923-5314. And my email is amclod@finlogicllc.com.
Excellent. Emma?
So I don't like the telephone, but my phone number is 404-633-9952. My email address is emma@fswealthmanagement.com. So emma@fswealthmanagement.com. Or you can find me on Facebook or Twitter at Emma Knows Money.
Oh, nice. I love that.
She's dropped all kinds of pearls today.
That's great.
All right, Bonnie, where can folks get in touch with you?
Everybody can find me at bbrmarketing.com or on all those social media pages as bbrmarketing.com. Or if you want to email me directly, it's bonnie@bbrmarketing.com.
Well, thanks so much for putting this together. I found this incredibly informative, and I know our listeners will as well. This has been a lot of fun.
It has been. I appreciate you guys coming today.
Thank you, guys.
Awesome. Thanks for inviting us.
Much appreciated. Lots of fun.
All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Bonnie Buell Russick. Our guests this morning, Allison and Miss...
at Emma Knows Money.
And everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next time on Atlanta's Most Trusted Advisors.